Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Saxo Market Call. We're really pleased to have with us today as a special guest, Tor Svellan of Svellan Capital and of the Svellan Global Trading Fund. Welcome to the Market Call, Tor.
Thank you so much and thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is great. A really great chance to talk to somebody who is a veteran in the industry of shipping, commodities trading, and the trading related to commodities and shipping commodities. And as well, equity. So we have a huge number of ways we can attack all of these very interesting topics. But tell us a little bit to start off at the top of the program, what Svellan Capital is and your global trading fund, just for the sake of our listeners, we can orient about where you're coming from and what you do.
Yeah. So Svellan Global Trading Fund is a fund that use a lot of focus and trying to do the supply demand on the physical commodities. Then we are trading the futures on back of that information. And at later stage, we're also trading the equities from our supply demand models on the commodities. Before I reached to start Svellan Global Trading Fund 5 years ago, I've been through the major shops. Both on the physical side, future, and equity. The companies like Goldman Sachs and Trafigura.
All right, Trafigura, that's the commodities trading house. So, I mean, it's so timely having you on because all the issues that that you cover here are issues that are driving so many concerns, growth concerns, concerns specifically for companies, for those that are exposed to rising prices, especially in the commodities space. So I think I'd like to maybe start off. And Ola Hansen, our head of commodities trade strategy, is also with us on the show today. Let's start off with where we've seen the biggest move relative to sort of the baseline. And that would be in Europe with this incredible spike in natural gas and of course, related energy prices. To your mind, what was the key driver of this huge spike? And where do we go from here? Is this sort of behind us? Are we going to get back to normal? Or is there no chance of that?
I think that in order to understand what really goes on in the nat gas market, I think it's important to take a step back to 14, 15, and 16, when we had a very sharp sell-off in the oil market. And in the metal market, we had a sharp sell-off in the iron ore. And just in general, the market has been under investment since the 2014, 15, and 16. And then when the more focus on the green side from 18, 19. We are now suddenly in a situation that the underinvestment has been continuing since the 2014, 15, 16. And suddenly we are sitting here with a supply crunch across literally every commodity.
Wow, there's lots to unpack there. So with this, so what you're referring to, and we talked a little bit about this in a brief chat we had before starting the podcast, that you had these really high oil prices, and it was mostly oil because the natural gas prices was an earlier phenomenon that had kind of been solved, at least in the U.S. market, and to a degree, the natural gas market got globalized with the advent of shale gas. But I remember back in the 2011 to 14 period, when you had those oil prices sort of sustained, Olaf, keep me on board here with the prices, around $100, give or take, for the full length of let's call it 3 years there. And we saw massive investments, massive utilization of available resources and incredible inflation in that space, but it didn't seem to yield many production gains. So I guess the lesson learned was it wasn't worth these capital outlays. Is that correct? And if that's so, at what point do these investments start up? Is there a price you can put on that?
So just on a more general note that, when a majority of the commodity producers have not made money, and in the same period, the freight market has been low, the capital inflow to support industry has been kind of non-existing. And if you take particularly the last 3-4 years, majority of the lending side into the industry and the investment eagerness has kind of disappeared. Then it's just no support on the supply side. And now we have a stronger demand. We are coming out of a COVID-19 pandemic situation, and we can't increase the supply side. And the crunch is very, very serious. We can't fix the problem by just increasing the supply side. And we will have then these extreme prices. And when it comes to why it's so extreme, I think it's important to understand the difference between a future and the stock market. When you invest in a future, it's always one winner and one loser. So when you have dramatic moves, like we have particularly now in the net gas, the losses for the sellers of the future are so dramatic. And these markets are well known for being used to sell volatility. And when the volatility spikes, it always, in the end, gets very dramatic. And just remind you about the oil price move in 2008, which was quite similar. And this time, we see it not only in the net gas market, we see it in the coal, and we see it a few other products as well. And then when you look into the general crude market, a lot of people find $80 like an expensive oil, and you know, feel it like it's high because we've just been down to the 30 and the 40, and we even went negative for a short period of time, even though that was a very technical happening. The Saudis break even for their budget is $80. So many of the producers are not really making a lot of money at the 80. And I think that's important to understand that. Why can't we go back to 100? Why can't we go back to 110 and stay there for a long period of time?
And I think adding to that, Tor, when we're seeing this, we're suddenly also seeing how the markets, the global energy market, is all interlinked. Because if one area becomes too expensive, then you will also massively look for ways to switch to other and cheaper fuels. And we must say with oil prices currently around the $80, historically it's very cheap now relative to gas prices. And I think that's also what's making the market nervous now, because Saudi Arabia and OPEC Plus, they continue their slow increase, 400,000 barrels a month. But we have now, over the last week, seen several insiders basically saying that, well, demand could easily, probably now already have reached 500,000 barrels a day from substitution. So you move away from expensive coal and towards and gas, towards diesel, propane, and gas oil. And as long as we have this this kind of domino effect, then the prices are likely to continue to move higher. I think I'd also just like to just return back to the gas market a little bit, because it is a market that we're not all that familiar with. We just take it for granted. Even trying to explain the link between gas and power and coal and power, these are all interlinked, because at the end, ultimately, you as a consumer, you consume electricity, and that has to be produced some way or another. And historically, it's come from coal and nuclear, and then later on from gas. In recent years, we've obviously seen this dramatic surge towards renewables, and I suppose that is still also a part of the problem. Because one thing is, we continue to produce increased capacity for producing renewables. The problem is obviously the system needs to keep up with it as well. And I think recently we've just seen that the when we produce power from renewables, it's either too much or too, quite often too little, and that's why we need these traditional fuels to kick in. But the question is really, I suppose, what I want to ask. I mean, that direction is, we are heading in that direction, but what are the key points that are missing in order for this transition to work properly?
I think that in order to understand the overall the electrification of the market, the power grid and the demand for electricity is increasing, I would say, quite dramatically, particularly in Scandinavia and the rest of Europe. And the most developed and the best power grids in the world sits literally in Scandinavia. But we are still struggling in Scandinavia with that. We have too much electricity in the north of Norway, and we are missing in the south. And in Sweden, they have plenty in the north, but in the south, they are 50% shortage. So many factories are actually been run on 50% capacity, and this has been going on already for a couple of years. And Denmark, when Denmark is short of electricity, they will buy from Norway, Sweden, or in some cases from Poland. And if you go back to last year, when we had the cold snap, we learned that both Norway and Sweden was actually using heating oil. But that, no one wants to talk about that, but that was actually what happened. And so it, for the, in order for the whole of Europe to be more, do more, use more electricity, we need to fix the power grid. And when we have the windmill and the electricity coming in and want to feed the power grids, we need industrial batteries. Those huge batteries are still not properly developed.
That's these a multi-year batteries. Process as well to get something like industrial batteries, which of course have been designed in theory and do exist at some on some scale, but nothing on a grid scale.
And those batteries, then we have another problem. EU do not want to buy those batteries in the future from Asia, because Asia are building these batteries and manufacturing these batteries based on electrification from coal. So EU wants these batteries to be produced in Norway or Sweden, where you're using clean electricity. So there are a lot of bottlenecks for the overall energy market on the electrification. And now this is, you know, what will happen in the future. And we are now sitting in a situation that we are short of coal, we are short of nat gas, and we are more or less also short of oil. The OPEC can increase production, that's for sure. But many are also very uncertain how much spare capacity OPEC actually has. Mm. So there are a lot of problems in the energy market. And that's what I'm coming back to. It's not an easy fix. We have to take this very, very serious. We all want to be green. We all want to have blue sky, but we also have to be realistic that we have to take step by step.
Right. And as you look at it, you look at all this, not just from the supply and demand dynamics, but also as an investor. And of course, the lesson from the whole shale oil period in the US, when there was a massive increase in investment and just this amazing increase in production that was, was cut off to a degree by the pandemic. Some of that has recovered, but we're not recovered back to the top, the peak of U.S. oil production. To your mind, what and investors were burned by the whole shale oil phenomenon. That was also even pre-pandemic. We saw many of these companies going bust. To your mind, to what degree is the investment in oil? And I talked about that high price period for oil, where they didn't see these returns from some of the massive outlays for these projects. The simple investment returns are not there. And to what degree is this ESG focus, meaning that it's taboo for whole, swathes of the industry, pension funds, whatever, that are calling themselves ESG minded or friendly, from even investing in the space? Is it both, or is it one more than the other? Or do you have a sense of that?
Yeah. So this is important. I think it's a good question. So when you go back to the whole shale revolution, and we got plenty of crude oil, and we got plenty of nat gas out of US, the world kind of took it for granted that the energy will remain cheap forever. And we have to remember that the reason why the world has been growing from the 50s, 60s, 70s is very much because the world could develop because of cheap energy. And now we have put us the world into a very, very strange corner, and taking free energy or cheap energy for granted. And now we're suddenly sitting here, and it's shortage literally across all the sources. And when it comes to coal was a commodity that no one's want to touch if you go 12 to 24 months back. And now we suddenly need it. Mm. So coming back to the question, why can't we just increase production? We can't, because there's no lending capacity. No banks, due to the ESG, is literally allowed to support these commodities. So the politicians need to make up their mind that if they want a stable energy market, we also need to let the banks lend an investor to invest into these products. And I'm not saying that I want a lot of coal to come back into market. I would love to see coal disappearing, but we just need to take this step by step. Remember that nat gas and LNG is considered in Europe as a fossil. In India and in Asia, and particularly China, LNG and nat gas is considered as the cleanest energy you can have. So we have to be honest and say that before we can have a sustainable and renewable business, we need to at least support the LNG part of the energy market.
You mentioned coal before here, Torben, and I think one of the, I suppose, from because the whole world is so interlinked, we need to keep a very close eye on what's happening in China as well, because the LNG LNG shipment seems increasingly to go to Asia. They competitive wise, they seem to be paying pay a higher price. But I think we've seen recently also just in coal that have you any views on are we suddenly starting to see shipments coming back in from Australia, because that has been China's basically been not buying coal for Australia almost for a year. And what kind of signal is that sending us?
No, I think that it's very important to understand how China is buying and selling commodities. When they want to make a statement, they are very firm. And in this case, when they had a dispute with Australia, they were willing to put 80 vessels with coal outside China and sitting there on the murders, meaning that they're paying for their waiting time. And they're not running away from that bill. They're actually picking it up. And that's a very, very strong signal and how they are willing to, when they have made their statement towards Australia. So, and then they decided at the same time not to buy crude oil and just draw on the inventories. And now they've been drawing so much that they have to buy crude oil. And they start buying crude oil when the Brent was at 72. In the same period, they tried to talk down coal, iron ore. They managed to talk down iron ore and put increased margins from the north of $200 down to 90, 100, 110 level. But the oil market is too big, so they can't talk it down.
No.
So when they came back and start buying physical crude oil around the $72, that was the clear signal for the Global Trading Fund to increase the long position we have in that space.
It sounds like now they're also starting to offload some of those coal ships, so they need those quantities. I have a couple more questions. Time is running already, John. It's fascinating insights here, but I would like to just to turn briefly, because we're talking about the blue skies and renewable in the future, and I'm sometimes a little bit not surprised because you're very innovative, but suddenly Norway has become this hub for trading all sorts of, or investigating and looking for new ways to battle emissions. And there's a whole host of small companies popping up left, right, and center. Some of them have been doing really well. Is there any particular reason for that?
Yeah, so since Norway has been very much into the whole renewable space for many years, and we had the Nord Pool, so you could trade electricity, and the emission market has been trading for years. I think that when the Deutsche Börse bought Oslo Stock Exchange, they decided to use Oslo Stock Exchange as the commodity hub of Europe. And also that was natural to have a lot of new IPOs on the renewable side. Many of these companies, I would say, are good, but there are also many new initiatives that have maybe not that realistic to actually make and be having a good revenue. But at least there are a lot of new companies. There have been too much money chasing the same project, so the prices went too much up. And unfortunately, the market peaked in January. It's been a big sell-off ever since. But, you know, we still have very solid companies around, like we have a few in Denmark and we have a few in Norway. that I think will be the strong companies in the future.
Fantastic. I have another question, John. Maybe that should be the kind of finishing question. But I know you are sitting on the board of several commodity related and transport related companies. So obviously your hands are a little bit tight. But if you should look some investment themes over the coming years, are there sectors? You don't have so many specific companies, but are there areas where we should not ignore?
Yeah. So in general, on the shipping market. Because the shipping markets are facing exactly the same as we are facing in the energy market, that there are no lending capacity. So we are facing a supply crunch as well. And I can't see that supply crunch being fixed till 2025-26. So the market will obviously be volatile, but it will in general be strong across all shipping. When it comes to oil companies, I think the companies that are producing natural gas is one of my favorites. Everything related to LNG, I think it's something you should be long. And on the renewable side, I think it's very important to be involved in the larger companies that are already producing electricity and have a fairly strong setup. In the name of the game in the equity market is liquidity, and these companies are more liquid. And I think you should stick with the big, well-known renewable companies.
Okay, and if I may, there's one maybe provocative question I'd like to close out with if we're looking to in the conversation soon. And that is, you made a key point, and I think it is so key that, you know, the whole massive growth we saw post-World War II and even before that, really, has long been a growth in energy available per capita. And that maybe we're bumping up against some of these limits. That's a part of a function of what's going on here. And you make some key points about these metals. And it's a point that Steyn has also underlined that, you know, to create a serious, larger scale replacement of our fossil fuel sources from alternatives is going to require a heck of a lot of metals, whether that's wind turbines, solar, or otherwise. And to my mind, that leads to the whole question, A, maybe you could just list a couple of the metals you think that are most undersupplied in that respect. But B, if this alternative energy is so diffuse and we have to make such huge investments that require a lot of energy investment to make, is green really green? So if you want to say, is green green, maybe answer that first and then just list a couple of the metals, just some idea of the kind of scale of increase we would need to see serious replacement level for alternative energy.
Yeah, I think it's very important to be honest that yes, we all likes the new electrification. We like the new cars, but you know, besides just electric car, the demand for just the develop the power grids so we can actually charge the cars across Europe, I think is very important. That infrastructure investment is it's very, very big. We need to be then able to feed electricity in a sensible way into the power grids. And then we need all the different points where you can actually charge. So the investments are so huge. And then we need a lot of materials in order to do all this. And then when you put, you know, the A to Z number, I think it will be challenging to see that that LNG maybe is not the best. I think LNG probably is very important to that EU and the Europe are maintaining production and usage. Just to think that we in a few years' time, within let's say 2030, can be neutral. I think right now it's impossible. I think we just need to take this step by step and find a sensible solution so we are not facing the problems we did last year when we had the cold snap, what we will face this year. The way it looks right now, we will also face the same problem next winter.
And in terms of this electrification, you're kind of indicating that copper could be on your list of favorite metals. Any other in particular you would be you like at these levels? Because I think the focus is on copper, nickel, aluminium, well, zinc, the whole lot, obviously, even silver from solar. But I suppose the major ones are the ones that will be in strong demand.
Yeah, I think all the one you mentioned, copper is definitely our favor. The copper price now at it was just touching 9,000. I snowed up to 9,495. I wouldn't be surprised that copper trades 15,000 in a year's time.
Wow.
All right. Well, on that note, thank you so much for joining for this special podcast tour. Some insights into some really critical markets at a really critical time. I think it gives us a sense of the scale of the challenges we face heading into a pretty uncertain winter in the case of Europe, but it certainly maybe having to reset our expectations for where commodity prices could go if we're going to get the investment needed to deal with these supply shortages and to carry out this massive transformation we all think we can and should be doing to deal with climate issues and to sort of restructure our energy system to a different basis than what it's on currently. So thanks again for joining today, and we hope you to have you back sometime as a guest in the future.
Thank you.
All right. All the best.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.